Sal back on the Fan. 888-808-1019 is the number to call. We'll get back to those phones in a little bit. Let's bring up the Pete Alonso stuff. So I guess Bob Nightingale, did you see this, BT? He had a column today. And now, again, take it for what it's worth. And all these columns here, we just give you what people are writing about who are in the know, and take it for what it's worth. Deduce what you want from there, from these columns. To steal a word from my partner there.
Yes.
So, apparently, Scott Boras is using Prince Fielder's nine-year, $214 million contract with the Tigers back in 2012 as a comp for Pete Alonso, which makes no sense whatsoever. Nightingale also talks about Bregman could be a possible option for the Mets if they miss out on Alonso, whatever it may be. But, dude, it just shows you how delusional, even if that's not 100% true. Like, how is that even a comparison that Boras is coming up with?
It's probably the dumbest thing I've seen today. It really is. It's asinine. It's nowhere near what he's going to get. You can ask whatever you want, and you can make the comps all you want, and you can try to position it favorably. That's Scott Boras' job. I don't begrudge him for that, but anybody with two brain cells knows that Pete's not getting anywhere near it.
And more importantly,
Pete better start knowing that. Otherwise, Pete ain't going to sign for a long time.
And this off the heels, we didn't touch on yesterday because you're doing all the Giants. This off the heels of a Jeff Passan report saying it's more and more likely Alonso's going to take a short-term deal with opt-outs, which is we seem to be going that way. My fear, like, Alonso's not getting a long-term contract. I think we could all agree on that right now. My fear
just define long, just before we keep moving.
Beyond three years.
I agree.
Now, I
could see him getting forward with the Mets.
Maybe the Mets say, let's just get this done and get over with. We'll give you four for 120 or whatever. Maybe that. He's not getting much more than that, and I think 5-6 is what he wanted, maybe even longer. By the way, Prince Fielder, when he got it, was 2 years younger than Pete and was also a far, far better player, and that deal didn't work out because Prince Fielder got hurt.
Had a neck injury.
The long-term deals don't work out, even for a player who was better than Alonso and 2 years younger. So that's a bad example if you're Scott Boras. Anyway, back to the matter at hand. What I am concerned about from a Mets perspective is that if the money and years come down, which we agree is going to be the case, why wouldn't another team jump in and say, all right, if the Mets are at 3 years 90, we'll give you 3 years 80 or whatever it may be or similar to that because they need power, whoever it may be. Pick a team, the Mariners, the Cubs, just pick a team.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be one team.
Angels.
Yeah, there's going to be one team that when the price comes down for Pete, because the ridiculous ask by Boras is just not like feasible for any. So when the price comes down and then he circles the wagons again,
yeah,
one team may say, I value that power. I'll give you the same amount that the Mets are giving. Then I think Pete might go.
Well, you know how I told you this is right before, I think, Christmas, the break. I told you I like to mess around and dabble in real estate. Just like always keep an eye on what's going on. I enjoy it, right? And that's like, and I think many of you can relate to this, that's the house in the neighborhood that is so exorbitantly priced. You look at it and like you're driving past it with your spouse. You're like, look what they're asking for this. There's no chance to get this.
Right.
And then you go back to the website, whichever one of it, whether it's Weichert or whether it's Trulia, Zillow. You're out there, you're looking at the homes, and you see it a month later. Oh, there's the little downward arrow sign, down, minus 50,000, down. You just bought a home 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, you've been through this, down 75,000, down 100,000. If Pete's a home, is going to be sitting there collecting dust for a long time. Now, we all agree on that. So the danger is what I've always said. The longer this thing remains stale and nobody bites and nobody will at something ridiculous and slash irresponsible, you have to wonder, even if it's in the neighborhood and even if it's maybe a year less but more money or the opposite, that Pete might start to really resent the Mets and leave. Because now his ego has been, and everybody's got an ego. Everybody, hopefully you can keep it in control. But of course Pete has an ego. He's a prominent home run hitter. I get it. And in his mind, he's overstating what he is. I get that as well. So he's thinking he's 30 years old. He's at his prime. I don't need 2 years. I need 5, 6, 7, whatever. He's not getting it. And if somebody comes in, one of those teams you mentioned or somebody else, a dark horse team, they very well might entice Pete to leave, which would be, I think, very damaging to the Mets unless the Mets have a pivot like the Yankees had a plan B. We can sit here and argue like we did. Is the Yankees' plan B as good as plan A? We'll see him when the season starts. I would ask you right now, if they don't, and I don't even know that Pete's plan A, because if Pete was plan A, they would have had this locked up already. So let's say that Pete's plan B. What's the Mets' pivot if Pete Alonso, if we wake up in 5 days or 5 weeks and Pete Alonso signs with the Cubs?
I don't think there's a good one, but I have to believe that they have one.
I agree that they have one because they're very smart.
Yeah,
but what do you think it would be? Would it be Bregman?
I don't think it's Bregman. No way.
Would it be Arenado for a year or two and then Vientos to first?
I also don't think. Now, that's been floated out there that they could do that, which makes it seem like the Mets have leverage. Move Vientos, bring up another, you know, a young player at third, maybe go get Bregman.
Go back to Beatty.
I'm not buying that they're moving Vientos off of third base. And I do believe Alonso was their plan A. I just think they're waiting for him. Like, from the Mets' perspective, they said, we offered you 6 years, $160 million a couple years ago. You turned it down. You're not getting more than that now because you've had 2 years to prove yourself. It didn't work. You've had two down years. The market is indicating you wanted to go to free agency. You've gotten to free agency. We're going to let the market dictate what you get. The market says you're not getting close to what we offered you 2 years ago. So here's our new offer to you now. And he still doesn't like that, even though 3 years, $30 million a year is a lot more than he's worth. He's not worth $30 million a year. So 3 years, $30 million a year for $90 million is a pretty good offer. Now, here's how I think this is going to work. That, let's just say the Mets offer 3 years, $90 million. Pete doesn't want it. Boris circles the wagons again, gets all the other offers. He goes back to the Mets and says, other teams are where you're at. For you to get him, you have to come up one more year. Four for 120.
And you think it would be the opposite way? The other teams would have to go up an extra year to entice him to leave the Mets. Generally, that's how the Giants offer Judge more money. Like, usually, if you want to take somebody, I'm saying, but it's counter to what usually happens.
Now, again, I don't know this to be factual.
Yeah, I got you.
I'm just trying to do some common sense math here, and maybe that's the case. But look, maybe Pete does stay with the Mets for equal. Although I think he's probably ticked off about how the contract situation has played out. Whether he's wrong or the Mets or whatever, the Nimmo stuff, the Soto stuff, like there's a lot there. Mets are paying a lot of guys. Pete is the last man standing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure if you put yourself in his shoes, there is an element of frustration here. So let's just say that other teams are equal to what the Mets are, but Boris says we need to stay here. We need to get you, the Mets, to four for 120. If you're the Mets, would you do that?
Yeah.
Me too.
I would do that.
And I don't love it.
It's worth the protection that Soto needs.
Just do it.
No,
it's 4 years.
On.
It's not a big deal.
Yep.
He's proven in New York. He's going to hit home runs. Yeah, we know he's not going to age well. Whatever. You move him to DH in a couple of years.
I know.
It's not a big deal.
I would do that. Yes.
So to me, the Mets have done everything well except just go one more year beyond their 3 year 90 comfort zone.
Yeah, and the funny thing too, Sal, even if he didn't have a very low average 2 years ago, and down power numbers this past year, which, as you said, you're right, two down years here. Even if they were commensurate with his previous 3 or 4 years, I still think it would have been a very complicated market for Pete Alonso, because we've seen the right-handed hitting first baseman who's approaching 30. That market is very different than any other position. A power-hitting catcher, a power-hitting third baseman, a fast-speed, you know, power-oriented outfielder, a starting pitcher, on-base guy. Yeah. So I just think even if there were no signs of decay, and there are, unfortunately for Pete, the worst timing, statistical erosion 2 years in a row in different categories, not just one, home runs, RBIs, and average in 2023, then I still think it would have been far from a layup. I think it would have been easier, but not a layup.
And the other part to this, and we'll get back to the phones here and talk about Rex and whatever else you guys want to talk about, 888-808-1019. The other part to this is, I like taking a short-term deal with opt-outs is one that would benefit a player who's betting on himself. Pete failed with that multiple times.
Yeah.
Pete is going to best perform, I think, if he's locked up. So maybe the 4 year 120 is as locked up as he's going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it could help a little bit. But I also don't want any bad vibes or bad aura or negative energy if I'm the Mets, meaning that Pete comes back with his tail between his legs, with his head hanging low because he didn't have any other options. I want him to want to be here. So you do have to make him at least happy a little bit. And maybe if you get him to that 120, maybe 130, maybe he starts to be happy being here.
Yeah, but you're not just going to give out money that nobody else is going to give out. But I do understand what you mean. There's There's a balance there of, all right, we have taken advantage of the market and we have played this very well.
Yeah, but you take them off.
Yeah, but what's the expense downstream? But even if there was, and yeah, there's ego and there's hurt feelings. And listen, we can sit here and say, you know, Juan Soto's five times as good as Pete. And in a lot of ways, he is. But in Pete's mind, as one of the preeminent home run hitters of his generation, not on his team, not in the National League, really since he stepped foot on a Major League Baseball diamond, Pete Alonso historically has been an all-time home run hitter right there with Ralph Kiner and a few other big-time names. And we know the Babe Ruth, mm-hmm. Aaron Judge, whatever, just with the home runs. So if you're him and you've actually put all those balls in the seat, while we can obviously prioritize why Soto's better and other and Judge is better, it's harder for him to do it. I understand why Pete's a little conflicted and torn.
Also,
I get it.
Also, think about
the human being.
Even for us, who have not been the biggest supporters, we were never pounding the desk, got to bring Pete back and give him whatever he wants. But we were at, there was a time where I said, I don't know, but all right, I'll give him 220. Like, those were the parameters we were working around then. All right, let's see, 5-6 years, whatever. He wants to go up to 180. Maybe the Mets just give him 2 to make him happy.
Yep.
So Pete, I think, was thinking years ago, 3. He wanted Aaron Judge stuff. Boris probably sold him on 253. We were saying, all right, maybe 220. It has dropped. He's not even going to get 1 potentially. That's a major kick in the you-know-what for Pete Alonso.
But when were we saying that? We were saying that before it was back-to-back down years.
Before this past season. Well,
before back-to-back down years.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, the numbers have dropped off. It was probably even crazy to think, to your point, even if he had a good year, he wasn't going to get 200 anyway.
True.
This is not just about last year.
Yeah, but if what do you have, like 89 RBI, whatever, it was a fairly paltry RBI total. Like, if he would have hit 260 this year.
The average wasn't bad. It was the ribbies and power that were down.
True, but the average was still down for the first 4 or 5 years as bad as the previous year. But if he would have hit 261 with 43 home runs and 117 RBIs, he's already signed. Yeah. Like, because then it's easier. Now, not for the 2+ million, I agree with that. But the complicated nature of this is he's a one-tool pony. He's a power guy, and that's it.
Somebody's going to pay for the power, though. And by the way, the market is just not there. Like, look at what Christian Walker got.
True.
Which is why we're mad at the Yankees. What? They couldn't get him for
16 mil.
For 3 years for that guy, for all that he could do? Even at his age?
Yep.
I
think Walker's better. I think you do too.
That's what I'm saying. I think I think Pete is a better fit for the Mets.
Yeah, you've said
Walker's
that.
Walker's better. Point is, there's no way you could justify paying Pete Alonso $10 million a year more than Walker, a lot longer than Walker, even though he's younger. The Mets are looking to say, hey, we'll get you 90.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting $10 million a year more for the 3 years that Walker, which, you know.
Yeah, when you put it that way, I think
120 should be the magic number. If the Mets come to that, I think that they'll get him. I'm not so sure that they will. Back to the calls on Jets head coaching search. Mike is in New Orleans. What's up, Mike?
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you, Mike?
Good. I'm really glad to be talking to you guys today. I got to say, I really disagree with the Brian Flores take. I think if you want another lousy head coach, a good D coordinator like the Jets have had for how many years now, that's the guy. Like, he fumbled the Tua situation. What did he start, like 2-6 with the Dolphins a few years ago and had to fight an uphill battle to not get in the playoffs? I think if you want to hire another defensive guy who's going to give you that kind of outlook, you might as well go with Rex Ryan or someone like that, you know? I mean, Flores, he'd definitely be a step up from what we got, and I'm sure he's a cool guy. But, I mean, you're really asking for a rinse and repeat with that guy.
I disagree.
And also, one other quick point.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. I think if the Jets are going to take a quarterback in the first round, I think they should go with Jackson Dart from Ole Miss. I think he's the real deal.
I don't think they're doing that. Mike, I don't think they're taking a quarterback in the first, with the 7th pick. Like, unless they trade back and they maybe get something in the teens and restock the cupboards because they did give up draft equity, you know, in the Davante Adams trade and the Aaron Rodgers trade. I mean, there's so many things at play here for the Jets. And thank you for the call. If you guys missed anything today, you got to go check it out and just get up to speed. Odyssey app, free Odyssey app, Hit Rewind. Like, the thing I think what's so unique about this hiring cycle for the Jets, unlike Gase and like Robert Sala, this last one, like, there is a case to be made equal parts both ways. You can just kind of, all right, we're going to reduce it to rubble, and we're going to straighten out the finances and maybe trade Sauce and maybe keep Garrett or trade Garrett and keep Sauce, whatever, or get rid of both and start over with a full rebuild, which I don't think they'll do. Or you could actually just get a real coach in here, add two pieces, a run-stuffing defensive lineman, one more old lineman, and make sure Rodgers comes back, and you can win 10 or 11 games. Like, very few times can you go either way, and I think both ways are justifiable.
And there are a lot of appealing candidates to potentially get the job.
Yeah.
None of which are Rex Ryan, but there are a lot of appealing candidates. You can sell me on a bunch of guys. I don't know why the caller would dismiss Brian Flores. I just don't get it. 5-11 his first year, 10-6, 9-8, and then got the boot. Those are two winning seasons back-to-back and dealing with some stuff and also showing that he can be an alpha male
yes.
and lead a football team. I love Brian Flores. And if not for the dark cloud of the lawsuit and all that stuff,
me too.
I think he would have been a better candidate after getting fired from Miami years ago.
Yeah, I just want to see one thing. His first year with Miami was 2021.
19,
I might be off
2019.
On that. Oh, that long ago. Okay, 2019.
Remember, also dealing with the pandemic too, which just is a...
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right, with 2019. All right, so yeah. All right, and but this is important. So this is really why I like Vrabel, and this is why I'm down on Rex. Like, to me, this really matters, and I brought this up the last couple of times we've talked about this. So go to 2016. That's Adam Gase. Tannehill, Landry's the star receiver. They lose in the wild card game.
Yeah.
All right? And then the next year, and they were a 10-win team, so they're good. Now, before that, they weren't very good, but they won 10 games, and they popped that year. Then, boom, the next year with Gase, they win 6 games. Then the next year with Gase, they win 7 games. So they're not really good. It's not like Flores inherited something that was just steamrolling with let me just jump it, kind of like Rex with Mangini's crew in terms of talent. He had to, so I don't get too wrapped up in the fact that Flores had a 5-11 season.
No, you expect that.
Correct. I look more, okay, well, what did he do in terms of building it up? And he won 10 games and he won 9 games,
correct.
Which is good.
Correct. And didn't have a chance to see it through because he's fighting with the morons who run that organization. BT and Sal on the Fan. More of your calls when we come back. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal back on the Fan. We'll get back to your calls here in a sec. 888-808-1019.
I got a quick question for you here. I got to be honest. I've gone back and forth. Now, it doesn't look like it's going to happen, but if you guys have seen this out there on social media, there was some traction apparently and reportedly between the Yanks and the Padres for Luis Arraez. You did see this for a couple days, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It has since been, pretty much shot down where it doesn't seem as if the Yankees view him as a fit. Now, that doesn't mean the talks can't be rekindled. See, here's the thing about Arraez, and I want your opinion. Like, to me, and this is where it becomes very interesting because, you know, you talk about batting average, which clearly has become an antiquated measurement for statistical prowess, right? We all get that. We look at the OPS, we look at the on-base, blah, blah, blah. But can somebody explain to me how a guy who's going to roll out of bed and hit 325 with his eyes shut in front of Aaron Judge is a bad thing? I mean, I don't understand how that's not like a home run. I know he doesn't run. I know he's not a great fielder at all. The guy hits 325 every season.
Right, but I think that there are things that he does that if we watched him on an everyday basis, that might make us feel like we're watching a little bit of Gleyber Torres again.
Agreed, but Gleyber Torres doesn't even come close to hitting 325.
Correct. So I like batting average. I know that it's antiquated, and you're right, and we understand why, but I like batting average, and I think the Yankees, they need a leadoff hitter. They also need another infielder.
Yes.
So putting him in that lineup, he's going to get on base. He's going to hit over 300. And I think Yankee fans would like that because it's a little bit of a throwback, a guy who actually puts the bat on the ball and get hit for a high average and maybe balance out some of the other power guys that they have in that lineup, Judge, Stanton, Bellinger, and so on. I don't think it's the perfect fit, though. I think Bregman is the perfect fit for where the Yankees are at. I want well-rounded. I know you're going to have to pay more, but you pay for what you get what you pay for. Well-rounded ball player, good defensive third baseman. You got a good pitching staff now. A lot of ground balls.
Yeah, no, that matters.
Third.
I know.
You have Jazz at second. Like, think about the infield, and you don't need all-stars everywhere, but
I agree.
You just lost Juan Soto, and you're replacing him with Plan B, which has been very good. To me, it would be perfect and complete if you could get Bregman at third base. And I don't care if he's a little bit of a jerk. Like, I think sometimes
maybe
that could help. He's been proven in the postseason. Imagine an infield with Bregman, Volpe, Jazz, and Goldschmidt versus Arise at second base and Jazz at third.
That is not his natural position, Jazz over third base. The only thing that I would push back on, you say that you get what you pay for, and I certainly know what you mean, but I don't think that would apply to Bregman because Bregman's power numbers, what you would be paying, not that the Yankees don't, I mean, we know this. You don't think the Yankees know this? Obviously, everybody knows it, that the ability to transfer his power from the bandbox in left field in Houston to spacious left and left center field in Yankee Stadium, there's not going to be a transfer of power. So you'd be paying top freight and the numbers would be going down offensively, but the value catching the baseball and everything that played the Yankees in the World Series, that would be addressed.
And by the way, with Arise, I don't want to say the comp would be Jose Iglesias, but look at a guy like Iglesias. Now, he does other things, right? He runs hard, plays good defense, was a good energy guy, good clubhouse guy. Mm. But he hit for a high average and was just putting the ball in play. Remember, he was out of baseball for a long time.
He was in the minors
because they didn't believe in, right, out of Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
Because they didn't believe in his skill set. To your point about Arise, where he keeps bouncing around and seems to be devalued because he doesn't possess a lot of the skills. Like, the one thing he does well is the one tool that is devalued in Major League Baseball. Remember, these things are cyclical. Like, even now, the power, as you're seeing with Pete, is being devalued. Mm-hmm. Running backs in the NFL, they were devalued. Now, all of a sudden, there's going to be an uptick in that. So maybe at some point, people are going to start to get it back to that average. You saw it have, the Mets had success with it last year with Iglesias. Arise is better, obviously, a batting champion. Maybe it would work for it's worth a shot. It doesn't sound like it's going to happen. It's worth a shot if Bregman, they were definitely out on him, but I don't think they're going
to
do it.
And Gavin Lux was a name that they thought they were in on. He went to the Reds yesterday.
Arise than him.
I would too. Gavin Lux at about 250 with an OPS, whatever, and, you know, nominal power. No. I would take Arise as well. I mean, three straight batting titles, dude. I mean, 316, 354, 314. He is a very, you know, not to belabor, but he's just a very interesting player to analyze by today's standards because, you know, when we were growing up, Wade Boggs didn't hit with power and some other, Tony Gwynn didn't hit with power. You know, how many guys, I'm sure there's some, not many, but how many guys in baseball have had back-to-back years with over 200 hits? Well, Luis Arias has. Back then, Wade Boggs would always get 200. Yeah. Ichiro would get 200. Now, Ichiro could run as well. Tony Gwynn would always get 200. Maybe a few others like Molitor, whatever, Donnie when he was healthy. But for a guy who gets a lot of hits, he scored 83 runs last year, 71 runs the year before that, no power, never even attempts to steal. He's just an interesting case study against the modern analytics, but I don't know. And I love these numbers, and I embrace most of them. But if you can hit 315 or 320 in front of Aaron Judge, I don't know how that's not a good thing and you're 27 years of age.
That's the key. In front of Judge, you don't need him to get to second base. You need him on first base.
Yeah.
You don't need him to steal bases.
That's true.
You don't need to just get on base, and you're going to score a ton of runs being on in front of Aaron Judge. And also, what are the alternatives? If it's not Arise, what is it? You'd rather Oswaldo?
Well, that's why.
Or DJ LeMahieu at third and Jazz at second?
Any situation that does not include, and Cabrera, I want him on the team, but I think he's a good, you know, 2-3 week a game player. I think he's got some positional versatility. Anything that includes either Cabrera or DJ starting next year is unacceptable.
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
I'm glad you said that. I'm going to hold you to that.
No, please
do. Same thing. It's been a couple of years
here. That.
They need another move.
Unacceptable.
Right, let's get back to the phones here. Pete and Seaford wants to talk about the Knicks, BT. We mentioned it before. Yeah. If you missed it, check it out on the free Odyssey app. What's up with your Knicks, Pete?
Hey, guys. You know, the Knicks' biggest problem, first of all, I'm much more upset by the Bulls' loss than I am the Magic loss last night. Yeah, they were 12.5-point favorites. Tough loss. The Magic are going to throw you into a rugby pitch every time they play you, whether they're missing their top guys or not. And you know what? The Magic are coming. Banchero's coming back. The Wagner brothers are coming back. Watch out for the Magic. Anyway, the Knicks' biggest problem right now is that Jalen Brunson is playing through a calf injury. He's 5 for his last 39 from three. And if you watch the last couple of games, he's not even trying. He's not even shooting, which means you know he has no lift on his shot right now. And he's dribbling into double teams. They were ignoring Precious Achiuwa last night down low. You know, if and when Mitch comes back, assuming he even comes back and isn't traded, he looks like a trade guy to me right now. And I've read that there are teams that are interested in him, even coming off the injury. The Knicks' biggest problem is Jalen Brunson. And I don't know, you know, Tibbs has gotten less stubborn over the years. You know, 12 years ago in Chicago, Tibbs would have played a six-man rotation for 35 games and gotten bounced in the first round. I think maybe we only get another few games of Cam Payne and Landry Shamet. I mean, I'm looking at this lineup last night. They are so small with Payne, Shamet, and Brunson. going 1-2-3, just crazy small. I think Tyler Kolek and Dottier are just coming because, you know, hamstring injuries are tough. I don't know when McBride's going to be back. This knee injury for Towns is very concerning. It seems like a load management injury.
Right, but Pete, and, here's the thing, and you gave a lot of great stuff there, and we do appreciate your passion and your info
on
the Knicks. We love it. We'll talk much more Knicks after football season. We start to get ramped up for the postseason again. I had a lot of fun with that last year, BT. You and I talking Knicks postseason was great. I can't wait for that. Here's the key problem, though. Forget about the ancillary pieces, Kolek, Dottier, whatever it may be, Hartporty, Shamet. He just said that the Knicks' biggest problem is Jalen Brunson's calf, or referencing Karl-Anthony Towns' knee. If anything happens to either of those two, the Knicks winning a championship is out the window.
I agree.
That's just how it is.
Yeah,
so like,
sure. How's that different for the Celtics or the Cavaliers with Donovan Mitchell?
Well, whatever. I mean, you know, maybe it's the
Luke
same thing.
Luke is hurt. That's over. Yeah. Kyrie Irving's out. Dallas is cooked. I mean, that's the way it goes.
Now, what that could lead to, though, is the minutes. And I feel like this is going to be the big theme the rest of the regular season when people start getting more locked in on the Knicks or they start becoming more of a focal point after football season. Because can Tibbs weigh, with this loaded group offensively and the talent that they have, can that still be rewarding come postseason time where it worked in the past? I don't know if you need to do that now. He's got to evolve and change, lay off the gas a little bit. Like, I respect it. I loved it.
Yeah.
I don't think this is the team to be grinding in the regular season.
I agree with you. You look at the standings right now, and no matter what happens, they're not catching the Cavaliers or the Celtics for the top two seeds, okay? So the reason why you keep your foot on the gas is, number one, if that's just your old school nature and you don't know any other way, and that used to be Tibbs, he's evolved a bit to give him credit, or you're chasing a one seed because it is paramount that you have home court advantage. Now, listen, I'm not saying I wouldn't love that for that decisive game to be at the Garden, but it was at the Garden last year. They got whacked. Now they were also banged up. They got drilled by 25, whatever it was. See, this Knicks team, if they're healthy, this Knicks team could be the four seed. And if you have Mitch, and if you have McBride, and if you have, you know, a second unit that we know who the second unit will be, and everybody's ready to go, I think that this Knicks team could go to any city in the country and win a seven-game series. I really do. That even if they're the underdog, if there's an extra game on the road, if it's the championship against the Thunder, if it's up in Boston, if it's out in Cleveland, whatever. If the Sixers make a crazy trade and they get their act together down there again. But the reason you chase wins now is to bag wins to get enough wins to have the top seed. But you're not doing that. You're losing games. You shouldn't have lost
the
Bulls.
The
you shouldn't have
anyway.
Lost last night. So not getting it.
So lay off the gas.
So lay off the minute chase.
Yeah.
It's time.
And it's not saying you don't have to at certain times ramp it up or you want to get toward the end of the regular season, push into the playoffs, start turning it up a little bit.
It's getting reckless.
Yeah.
It's getting reckless.
Yeah, because you don't need to prove anything.
Mm-hmm.
We know what you have offensively. Defensively, a different story. And even that, for that to have success, you don't need to play these guys 48 minutes every freaking night. So if they're banged up, if they're compromised in any way, lay off the gas just a little bit in the regular season. It's worth sacrificing some losses for the greater good, keeping Towns and Brunson specifically fresh for a deep, hopefully, postseason run.
Yeah, and people associate, all right, how's it going to manifest itself? Big minutes down the road in May and June, what's it going to be? Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that somebody's going to rip a hamstring like OG did. Yeah, sometimes it could be that in your face, but sometimes it could just be, you know, slow erosion of bounce, which is not necessarily detectable from a Monday to a Tuesday, but it is detectable from April to May, you know, April to late May. And then, you know, you try to guard Jaylen Brown and all these studs, and you just don't quite have the pop and the burst, and you lose.
It would be, to me, unforgivable if Tibbs doesn't acknowledge that he's got to dial it back a little bit.
I agree.
With this group at this time. I think it worked in years past.
Yep.
I didn't cry about it. They have the talent now. Just play the game the way that it's supposed to be played, meaning get to the freaking postseason in one piece.
Yep.
And take your chances with that loaded offense and hopefully an improved defense.
We're on the same page with this. And when he got here and he was trying to build the culture, with a bunch of, you know, role players. We know all the names. And, of course, Randall. You run them into the ground because they weren't long-term deals. They weren't A-list players. You just try to grind out some wins to make the playoffs to change the culture because you don't know. Does the culture change when you make the playoffs or do you make the playoffs because the culture changes? And it's very hard to delineate between the two. I think for that team to make the playoffs, there was great symbolism. So I understood that. He's got to take his foot off the gas. And we're in the middle of football still with the Jets hiring cycle and the Giants news yesterday. This is going to become a bigger story. The Knicks are getting run down right now.
Call of the Day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
Today's Call of the Day is brought to you by Volvo Cars Ramsey. Finding the Volvo you want is easy at Volvo Cars Ramsey and by Edison Heating and Cooling, New Jersey's heating experts. Steve is in Poughkeepsie. What's up, Steve?
Hey, I actually disagree with you guys. I'd like to bring in Rex Ryan. I'd either want to bring in Mike McCarthy or Peterson as the offensive coordinator.
Oh, God, stop. Stevie, hold on. Let's Stevie. This is Earth calling, yeah. Stevie. Hold on, Stevie, buddy. Let me just intervene for a moment here, Steve. Mike McCarthy is currently the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. He's going to come and work under a guy that's been, you know, given hot takes in a studio for 7 years, and most of the hot takes not even good? Really?
I mean, McCarthy and Peterson, both your guys you want to bring in, won Super Bowls as a head coach before. They're going to coordinate under Rack? Come on! Corey is in Springfield. What's up, Corey?
I think that we should just continue the clown show. If we go back to the newspaper article, 15, 20 years ago when they had the clown car with Rex in it? Let's bring it back.
Okay, why?
Until we get Woody Johnson to sell the team, we're just going to continue to be a clown show.
Corey, he's not going to sell it.
Now, there you have it. We've had a bunch of great calls today. In case you missed anything, check it out on the free Odyssey app. Let's finish up BT on the phones. We've got some people still want to talk about Rex Ryan and the Jets head coaching search. What do you got? Yeah, I do remember that, actually.
Oh, my God. That looks like it was about 2015. Hold on. That's Mark Sanchez. My God. Tim Tebow. What's the year?
Bringing in Tebow really just ruined everything.
That was ridiculous.
God, they were so lost. I mean, Hard Knocks was great. I remember loving that. Once they went away from Tannenbaum, it really went off the rails and got to Idzik.
Oh, that was 2012, actually. How is that?
Yeah.
But why would they have, I guess... I don't know.
Yeah, either way,
it's a while ago, and I just saw the picture that I just showed Sal. My God.
All right, Pete is on Long Island. What's up, Pete?
Petey!
Gentlemen, how we doing?
Good. What's up?
Pretty well.
Quickly, Gruden. Now, if I'm an owner or a GM, I'm calling some of the Hall of Famers that played for him, Brooks, Rondé, Keyshawn, Warren Sapp even, and I'm getting the consensus whether or not the Damaris Smith emails, you know, rule him out. You know, I gotta ask those guys first. They played for him. They know the man.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on. I know you guys, you have to look out for future employment, so you treat these owners with kid gloves to some degree.
Well, you got the wrong show, and I think you got the wrong station for sure.
What are you doing?
What?
Have you heard us before? It's BT and Sal. Hi. Nice to meet you.
Two guys, right, that are Silver Spoon grandchildren of generational wealth, who if they had any business sense whatsoever, we'd be watching games in a dome on the west side rather than losing that project to the owner of the Dolphins. All right? That's completely unacceptable.
Yeah.
You know? And lastly, you know, I don't know what the ELEC people are selling, but boasting of the two stadiums...
I'm not going to get into that, and thanks for the call, I think, but... I mean, come on. How could you be taken serious when you're saying that we are kissing the owner's rear end, or basically saying that, paraphrasing that, when we're not doing that at all? All we're saying with the owners, or what we did say earlier, was just there's no point to yell and scream, sell the team. It's not going to happen. Or fire the owner, or get rid of the owner. Like, you could say why you think the owner is the problem. Certainly, we've gone over that. But then what? Because now you got to get beyond that. Okay, great. Woody Johnson thinks, well, he's not selling the team. What he is going to do is hire a head coach, which is why we're trying to further the conversation, which then should hopefully lead to maybe some success on the field.
I mean, listen, Sal, there's a lot of wasted energy over the years on some of the topics on sports radio, including our show. Like,
right.
I mean, think of, like, you know, you talk for 4 hours a day, 20 hours a week, and, you know, 80 hours a month. I mean, come on. There's going to be some stupid conversations, but there's nothing more stupid and maybe more pointless, nothing more pointless than having a conversation about having Woody Johnson sell the Jets, unless he is a corrupt criminal, which to this point, that's really the only thing he hasn't been. as the owner of the Jets in terms of bad, then they're not taking the team from him. And people need to understand this. It's not happening.
And, but we have blamed ownership, whether it be Woody or Mara.
I think
proper blame has been assessed.
And how
here.
We've got on
Come
how,
on,
come on,
yeah,
we have to defend
I mean, it's
that.
Ridiculous. Listen, people could say Cohen, who's been a great yes. owner so far, we've got on him.
And people could say a lot of things about us, right? Yeah. You know, being too soft. If that's on anybody's list, I don't know what to tell you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, nice try.
You got the wrong show.
Omar is in the Bronx. What's up, Omar?
Hey, how are you? I just wanted to get your take on Todd Monken from Baltimore for the Jets head coach.
Todd Monken, interesting. I don't think they're very serious about him, but interesting.
Is he on the list? I didn't see his name.
He further down. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
What about you?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know what he's done in Baltimore. You know, elevating that offense from Greg Roman. I mean, I think he'd be a great candidate.
Yeah, listen, he took what Lamar has, and Greg Roman's with Jim Harbaugh with the Chargers now. He's with him with the Niners. Greg Roman is a well tried and true run proponent. Okay, and Todd Monken came in there and diversified it, modernized it, and played to what Lamar Jackson does incredibly well, which shows great adaptability. Now, is anybody on the roster that remotely resembles Lamar Jackson? Can he bring Lamar with him? I mean,
yeah,
that's the
kind
danger.
Of the point. I'm just looking over his resume here. He was with the Bucs before that. Yeah, I mean, look, Baltimore is a great franchise, right? So anything from the Harbaugh tree, I guess, would be enticing to a certain level. Monken, I hate to even say this, but it's just the first, like,
what?
I bring up his picture.
Yeah. Looks like
No, it's just.
Let me see.
I just wouldn't.
That's why I don't want Arthur Smith.
Yeah, well, I can see that. I can understand that. But at least Arthur Smith was a head coach and not a bad one. Those knuckleheads in Atlanta, I'd be better off with Arthur Smith.
He was 7-9 every year. You always say, what was so good about him?
Well, he never had a quarterback. This year they actually had a quarterback.
He doesn't look that bad.
No, it's not that he looks bad. I'm not getting into it. I don't want to get into what it looks like.
Well, that's the first thing you said.
I know, but it doesn't project the way that Brian Flores projects.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about some of the top guys.
I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
I guess. He looks more like a third base coach.
I'm getting
or even a first base coach.
I don't want to say Rich Kotite vibes, like Doug Marrone vibes from him.
Really?
Yeah.
Doug Marrone was like bigger, and I'm not seeing that at all. I mean,
I'm not saying looks. I'm saying like the vibes that I'm getting from that picture.
Like soft?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like maybe a guy who's going to be overmatched by New York. And again,
I got you.
First time head coach. Okay. If I'm going to go offensive coordinator route, I am not going Todd Monken.
No, neither am I. Hey, before I forget, happy anniversary to you.
What's that?
Happy anniversary.
With?
It's a big day for you 4 years ago.
Get married today. 4 years ago today, January 7th.
Boys got Lindor. Happy anniversary.
Yes.
Will he bring you a championship?
I think eventually, yeah. When? Well, I mean, he, in isolation, won't bring a championship, but
he'll be along for the ride by the time he starts to decay. And
he and King Cohen and Juan Soto, yeah, I think eventually.
You think
eventually,
he gets a championship?
Yeah. I do.
You do?
I do. Right. I mean, I think the Mets are winning, what would we say?
Well, we didn't say anything. Least, I don't know what you said.
At least two in the next 5 years, I'd say. Pop, how many championships
today.
You have the Mets down?
Conservative, you guys.
I would say in the
three?
Next five or
five
ten.
5 years. 5 years.
I'll definitely say three.
Yeah.
Well,
you guys are actually playing it pretty close to the vest today. I'm surprised.
Maybe over the course of the next 10. Oh, man.
4 years ago. Man.
Hey, I'm just happy that Lindor's not washed up.
And me too.
I'm happy he's still switching.
Well, I'm just, like I always say, every time this comes up, I'm just happy he didn't heed the advice of those idiots who were saying that he should not bat lefty anymore. I mean, he's just such a...
Come on, you brought it up. I mean,
I didn't bring that up.
No, I'm saying you brought up Lindor. We didn't want to... Oh, Willie Mays just took a fall here in the studio. Did you see that? He fell off the train tracks.
Is he still hanging on?
Evan had Willie Mays on the train tracks.
Don't get run over by the train.
I think it's over. He went down underneath there.
Willie took a spill.
Anyway, what are you bringing up Lindor for? We're talking Rex. You're changing up
the studio. So corny, honestly. Look at some of these. What are we doing? Like, we're 5 years old.
No, I think it looks nice. Boomers leading the way
looks
here
good.
With the
I like Booms. But this
of course.
I love Boom. You know, Boomer's the captain. He's the captain.
I want to go out the captain. I know, I get it.
He's the captain. He's our captain. He's my captain.
Yeah.
Might not be your captain.
No,
Boomer's the captain
is.
Of the station.
Absolutely, 100%. Okay. But
then you always mock every time I bring him up. Like,
wow. I think there is
kind
a little...
of like you and Francesca kissing the ass.
Yeah.
So you say, like, kiss Boomer's ass and you kiss my... Who kisses whose ass or whom's more? Do I kiss Boomer's ass more or do you kiss Mike's ass more? I, objectively speaking, I honestly believe that you kiss Francesa's ass a lot more.
We'll get to that tomorrow.
We're going to have to get to that. We're going to have to get. I want to get to that.
All right. That does it for us. Another fun show. We'll be back again tomorrow at 10 a.m. Thanks to Dove. Thanks to Hoff. Thanks to everybody who listened and who called. We appreciate each and every one of you. Evan and Tiki. Speaking of ass kissers, Evan and Tiki, they're coming up next. See you tomorrow.
Sage dragging like a horse.